Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, Vachon. I understand there's a little bit of snow on the ground in places. Enjoy. The white winter is on its way. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. And of course, every week we gather to try to live up to his standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, humor, and progressive persuasion. And of course, while Brian always said less is more, more or less, we always enjoyed spending more time with Brian on the Brown Briefly. So welcome. I'm glad you could join us. Let's jump in right in with friends and old and new. So let's first acknowledge former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, recovering back surgery patient, and West Texas devotee, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys? Well, I got here, put it that way. Snow and all, I made it.
And you've been here on the morning scramble.
I have. Awesome. I've have since 9 o'clock, yeah.
Fantastic. And I see now your wingman has this week been replaced by our special small talk guest, Vachon Basin steward and member of the King County Watershed Stewardship Unit, Greg Rayborn. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Likewise. Good to see you. Also, of course, we have the historian, skipper of the Vachona, president of the Vachon Heritage Museum, and guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
Oh, you're muted, Bruce. You're muted. Bruce, you're muted.
Yep.
There you
go. Good morning. It's great to be alive on a snowy morning like this and snuggled up warm in front of the fireplace. So
good plan. We are remote in front of a fireplace ourselves, but not on Vachon today. Well, I'm looking out at green grass and blue skies.
And where are you?
Well, gray blue skies.
Where are you?
We are in Squim right at the moment.
Oh, lovely. You're at the banana belt.
So, you know, they're forecasting snow tonight, so we'll get our opportunity to slide around on the roads ourselves.
Right.
Did you get a chance to talk to the QAnon mayor?
The QAnon mayor is a thing of the past, fortunately, in Squim. So, but I do hope to meet with Karen Hogan, who is going to join us on the Brown Briefly in a few weeks to talk about the QAnon mayor and the work that this community did to have an early retirement for the mayor. Hopefully we'll have a chance to have some coffee while we're here. Hey, let's make sure to also acknowledge our friend Craig Bellis, who is joining us today on Zoom. Craig is an advocate, arbitrator, mediator, Fulbright specialist, and the former Washington State Assistant Attorney General. And Craig, I understand you're in recovery mode, but I'm glad you could join us today.
Yeah, I'm glad I could be here. Luckily, this is radio, you don't have to look at me. I just came off a great Thanksgiving down in Ashland, Oregon, with my son and daughter and granddaughter, it was a wonderful time until I contracted some noxious virus. I soldiered on and had a wonderful time.
Okay, and it sounds like you are soldiering now, although we can detect just a slight change in the tonal frequency of your voice.
More melodic.
You wish.
Yeah. Yeah. You have your captain's voice on. There you go.
All right. Well, Craig, before we dive into small talk, anything else you'd like to let us know about your week on Vachon or your travels?
For me, not really. I'm happy to come home. I'm grateful for my wife who drove all the way back from Ashland while I was trying to sleep in the passenger seat. It was wonderful. We were listening to an audiobook, The Holographic Universe, which is just a wonderful book. If you're into astrophysics or you're into the whole parallel universe kind of thing. It's a fascinating, fascinating book.
All right. Great recommendation. Thanks. And again, while we let's go around the table and Truman, I do hope that back surgery is becoming a thing of the past, but tell us how you're doing and what your prospects are for the future.
Well, I'm going to have to go in for a second MRI, and once I get that one done, then they may give me another epidural injection to try and settle this darn thing down. But I'm getting there, and I'm getting to be mobile. In fact, I flew down to Oregon yesterday, had a lovely flight, and a friend of mine came down to pick me up where we dropped off the airplane to have some work done. And I just heard from the guy, Craig, that he's not going to be able to get the thing done until Monday, it looks like. So anyway, it's one of those deals.
What did you expect, Truman?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I expected. But you know how it goes.
Sounds like there's a history there, but why don't we move on? Bruce, how's your week been shaping up?
Oh, it's been good. It's been fun. Sort of particularly with the snow, watching the birds react to the snow and sort of, you know, you start to see a little bit of change in behavior. You start to see particularly with the water birds. So it's been really fascinating. And this Friday evening, so first Friday in December, the museum will have a formal opening of the Audubon bird exhibit, Birds Through the Seasons, which is a recap of what we did about a year ago. Working with Audubon and Sarah Driggs, put together just a beautiful video of birds on Bashan. And she's redone it, but this time looking at them seasonally. So the migratory birds and the birds that stay here during different seasons. And so it's really just beautifully done. And she did a masterful job of what I call discovery learning. When you see it, what she does is she'll put up a picture of the bird, just these glorious photographs, you know, over 25 out of photographers submitted photographs. So you see a beautiful picture of a bird, then you hear its song, and then you see, you know, fading in, you see the name of the bird and the name of the photographer and where it was taken on Vashon. So rather than sort of just putting it all in front of you, it sort of stages it so that you see the bird, you hear its song, and then you get the identification and the name of the photographer. So it's just beautiful. So pop by the Heritage Museum sometime in the next month or two and enjoy that exhibit.
You know, there's so many bird lovers on Vashon, and there's certainly one in my household. So I'm thinking maybe there's a high interest in attending that. Thank you for making sure that we're aware of it. And I have been in touch with Sarah. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned Sarah's name, that she, you know, we're hoping that the Audubon, a spokesperson from local Audubon, will have a chance to join us on the Brown Briefly sometime in the near future. So,
yeah, let me put in another pledge, a plug, if you will. Audubon has just issued their annual calendar of Vashon birds. So that's for sale. And you might want to pick one up.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, Greg, thank you again for joining us on Small Talk and for venturing through the snow dusting on Vashon to be in the studio today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your week? How's things going?
Well, I guess I was part of the Oregon contingent. We did a road trip down to Medford where we have relatives. And I apologize in advance for anything mechanical around me that breaks in the studio, because right now I have this aura of destruction ranging from hot water tanks to pump tanks to sinks to toilets. Just anything I'm around stops working.
Just don't be touching this board here, okay?
That's flat. Right. Anything else is fair game, but not the board.
That's right.
Two flats on the road trip.
Oh, no.
Yep, front end went out, new brakes. You know, it was fantastic.
I have to tell you that I call that the fecal touch, if it were. So there you go.
Wow. So now you have all the bad karma is now behind you, I think. Maybe it's one way to look at it. So the good karma is coming.
Excellent. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say let me tell you about our well. the day, speaking of things that break, the day before Thanksgiving, all of a sudden I got the call from an uphill, upstream member of our well community saying, what's the deal? No water. And it's like, oh, okay, normally the water stops flowing when the electricity stops flowing. And if you have electricity but no water, then you got a different type of problem. So sure enough, the pressure pump motor had burned out its starter windings, and a local neighborhood hero drove into Tacoma on the afternoon before Thanksgiving to buy some parts. And thank goodness for the trip, but unfortunately the parts didn't do the trick. The good news is we've now contacted with some of our favorite water well maintenance providers, some of who will go nameless because they don't want to continue doing well maintenance service.
Yeah, I wonder who that
would
be.
To our rescue. You don't know Bob.
Yeah, exactly.
And the community now has water. So we've also connected with a provider who it looks like is going to help us out on Vashon to get back to whatever normal is on Vashon in terms of water. So that's coming up. Okay, and just in case you don't know who I am, Kevin Jones, Indivisible Vashon, Vashon Climate Action Group, and a Brown Briefly. All right, let's jump into small talk. Vashon Maury Island Groundwater Protection Committee member. Most of us don't think much about water until it's not there. And when we open the tap or flush the toilet, and then, of course, water becomes paramount in our lives. But it's there in our lives in so many different ways. So considering the essential role that water plays in our everyday lives, it is my pleasure to introduce Greg Rayborn, Vashon Basin Steward. Thank you, Greg, for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Always love talking about water resources.
Fantastic. And Greg, you mentioned your primary responsibility is the Vashon Basin Steward. So what is the Vashon Basin and what stewardship role do you play?
I know the title sounds like I probably hand out towels in the men's room or something like that, but the Vashon Basin Steward, there's a basin stewardship program throughout King County in the unincorporated area. So some of my colleagues will represent areas like the Green Duwamish River or the Cedar Watershed or different, and those are areas where topographically the water all flows into those river systems. So. And we're largely, since we work for King County, we're largely in an unincorporated area. So the area that I focus on is Vashon Maury Island, which is great because I also live here. So,
mm-hmm. And given the stewardship of the basin, it sounds like your responsibilities range pretty widely. What's kind of the scope of work that a basin steward engages in?
Yeah, so it depends on the needs, largely of what's happening in that particular watershed or basin. So here on Vashon, I'm largely focused on the program primarily came out of salmon habitat restoration and recovery efforts. So here on Vashon, since it's Chinook salmon, I'm largely focused on the marine shoreline for the salmon habitat recovery. I also work on some of our larger stream systems and estuaries. So and protection that can involve habitat restoration or also land acquisition to preserve what's there or restore, you know, plan for future restoration on those particular sites. So on the marine shoreline, that might look like bulkhead removals or replanting along the shoreline in stream systems. Maybe we're adding additional wood into the stream to add pools and change the habitat structure and make more insects for the salmon to eat. So it can vary on the location.
So quick question. Do you work with the land trust in here on the island in protecting some of these or?
Absolutely. Yeah, almost on a daily basis we're in contact. We have very integrated with the Vashon Land Trust, depending on what the geographic area is and who it makes most sense to work with. So it's a great partnership. And then for the Groundwater Protection Committee, that's part of those responsibilities. So we have long ago that used to be two separate functions, but its budgets got smaller and people retired that it's like, oh, just those positions got merged. So I also work with our Citizen Committee on Island, the Vashon Maury Island Groundwater Protection Committee, and that volunteer committee oversees the monitoring efforts on the island and for both groundwater and surface water, because here on Vashon, they're so interconnected. We aren't connected hydrologically to the mainland, right? We're just this lens of fresh water right there perched, surrounded by seawater.
Greg, did you have a question?
Let me ask you, Greg, about do you work with Bianca Perler, Maria Mettler at the Vashon Nature Center, and what's that relationship?
Yeah, they're really, they do so many great things for the island, and we're very proud to work with them as well, and in both capacities, both as the Vashon Basin Steward and the Groundwater Protection. They do some of their schools efforts and having kids go out into the streams and monitor stream invertebrates to see how our water quality is doing. That's funded by the Groundwater Protection Committee, at least in part, anyway. But yeah, they're very important partners.
Great. Truman.
So I was heartened to hear you say that you also are dealing with surface water. And one of my big concerns is, I mean, I understand that rain belongs to the state and that it doesn't belong to the individual, but that not in the last too long a time period that we gained approval to capture rainwater and use it locally. I mean, at our own home. So I guess what I'm asking is, connect with people who have that system, and or do you?
Generally not. So those were state level regulations as far as water rights. Yes. They're the ones that manage who can use what water.
Right.
But in addressing that now, it's for cisterns and collection. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the current status as far as rainwater collection as your primary water source at home.
Right.
I know that there's, in the past, that's allowed in some areas of the state, not others. And I'm not sure where we're landing currently on that.
Well, I know that I think it was Friday Harbor, not Friday Harbor, but the island anyway, that the San Juan Island that first had the availability of water collection. And I think we were second here on Vashon. The reason I was interested in that, when years ago I was working on the K2 project, trying to do something with the K2 building, and we discovered that the roof of that building produced several million gallons of water a year.
Wow!
Yeah, if you run the dimensions of that and the rainfall for that time or for that area. So anyway, I'm very interested. And the second thing I'm very interested in, this is a King County thing, is the surface water management fee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a commissioner, airport commissioner, and we are stuck paying a little over $16,000 a year in swim fees. Do you have anything to do with that?
It does pay my salary, so thank you for that.
Darn.
Thank you, Truman.
Yeah, I was afraid that was coming.
Yeah, so I'm part of the division that is funded by that. So, yeah, but I can provide, I can direct you to who you can talk to about that. Have you pursued any sort of reduction
in the fees? I think my cohorts have. I have not personally, but I'm willing, believe me.
Okay, cohorts or colleagues. I'm glad to see that you have friends. Bruce, it looks like you got a comment.
Yeah, Greg, as we move along here, I just for some clarification. So there's groundwater, there's surface water, and then there's salt water. And as a basin steward, you deal with all three. Could you sort of talk a little bit about the relationship there? So as we move ahead.
Yeah. So, of course, right now we have a mix of snow and rain that are sprinkling on the island. And in different areas of the island, the ground is made up of different, basically different pore size between the particles of dirt, right, and minerals and rocks. So in some areas, the water can soak in to the aquifer, and in other areas, it is shed off, with that hard pan, glacial till. That doesn't take in a lot of water, so a lot of that area is shed off water that then until it gets to a sandier area where it can recharge the aquifer. So we don't have a uniform surface. And then once the water gets into the aquifer, it'll come out in different locations as it percolates down through the soil. It'll hit an area that it can't go through and might move horizontally until it comes out into a stream. So you think about, we don't have any summer snowpack on the island. So how come Judd Creek and Shingle Mill and these year-round creeks are continuing to run? And that's because the groundwater is now coming out into it's surfacing through springs and then feeding our streams. So when we talk about water supplies on Vashon, we're not just talking about water for people. Fish and other life that we share the island with, of course, needs that water as well. And then eventually the water runs down until it gets to where it mixes with the salt water, and that's usually at the mouth of the stream in the estuary, and then it heads on out into the largest estuary in the area, Puget Sound.
All right. I see Craig would like to jump in.
You're muted.
Yes. Hi, Greg. I hate to go back to basics, and everybody here may roll their eyes when I ask this question, but I still hear people who I consider educated, enlightened individuals who say that there's a massive river running underneath Puget Sound coming right under Vashon from Mount Rainier, and that's where we get all of our water. And I go, well, have you ever heard the expression sole source aquifer? What does that mean to you? And can you nail that shut for us?
Yeah, we have not discovered that massive river of water coming from either the Olympics or from Mount Rainier. I've heard these theories from both, but yeah. So sole source aquifer, that means that we're reliant on the rainfall that lands on the island here for our drinking water, which makes it incredibly precious. And also what it picks up on the way into the aquifer is also important because we're drinking that. We drink a lot of surface water on Vashon. We drink a lot of spring water, and we drink a lot of groundwater, or use a lot.
So we need to have some scuba diving explorers find that river and confirm its existence or lack of.
But, there you go.
You know, Truman, you were going to.
You could put one of those dyes up on Mount Rainier and see if he shows up here. You know, that would do it for
okay.
us. Or,
in our water.
Yeah, in the water. That's it. No, what I was going to say, though, is I have a fairly shallow well. I think it's only like 60, 65 feet, something like that. And I'm in a very sandy soil area of the island. And what I do, speaking to what you were saying, one summer we had a very, very, very dry summer, you know, kind of like this year, but the water level went down considerably to the point where I had to actually throttle down my my pump to keep from going dry, you know, getting periods of dry. So is that a common occurrence, or?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily common, but there's definitely seasonal fluctuations in individual wells, especially if you're in shallow areas. In general, if you do the math of the amount of rainfall that lands on the island versus what should be recharging each year in our population, we shouldn't have a water shortage. But that doesn't mean the water is in the right location for us to be able to access it, because the underground, there isn't that underground river, so it's yeah. it's mixed up. It's hard to find exactly the best water or a consistent water source. But we're not seeing, in our monitoring wells, we're not seeing consistent declines in water levels.
Okay, so it is cyclical, I would assume,
yes.
with the seasons. So the other question is, I was calculating the flow off the top of the roof as I was explaining. Do you do the same sort of thing with the amount of rainfall on the surface area of the whole island? And do you have any idea of what percentage of that is absorbed versus how much is runoff?
I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. I know that we're very fortunate to one of our groundwater protection committees members is a UW professor who has looked at a lot of this information and has it. So that's something I could find.
But somebody can figure that out.
Yes, okay. Yes. And it's not precise. I mean, because models are all about resolution and how much you can only look so small.
Right, right.
Bruce, I think you had a comment.
Yeah, just for some historic context, that sort of underground river, I mean, the first sort of counter to that was the Carr Report in 1983, which was a groundwater, and sort of the first attempt to look at groundwater scientifically on Vashon. So 1983, I mean, some of us were on the island in 1983.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, wow, that's only, what, 40 years ago or so? You know, and it's sort of, wait a minute. So that sort of underground river and the artesian spring kind of idea has a long history on Vashon. And it's just, mm-hmm. you know, trying to batter away at the with the science of it. As we're 40 years into it and it still hasn't taken hold. So,
yes. Well, hey, Bruce, I think you had a really good question of Greg there about this distinction between the watershed and the aquifer. So, Greg, what do you feel is the most important issue facing the watershed? And what do you think is the most important issue facing the aquifer? And maybe they're the same issue, but tell us where you're focusing your energy.
Well, I think that water, we talked about probably having enough water supply available, but for the population projections. But what we need to look at more importantly is water quality. Because we can't necessarily, if we contaminate what we have, well, then we're kind of out of luck. And we're relying on increasingly expensive technologies to try and have water drinkable. So looking at pollution prevention is something that a lot of our groundwater committee efforts have been on. We have a Safe Wells program where we reach out to folks about, hey, how you can protect your wellhead area and what you should do or should not do to make sure you're not contaminating your well. And also, when you think about the aquifers of Vashon being surrounded by this salt water, sitting basically in a saltwater pond, over time with sea level rise through climate change, that's going to become, saltwater intrusion could play a big, larger factor. Mm-hmm. And then as far as, there's all different kinds of habitat issues we can look at as well that are related to water resources. Prior users of Vashon Island did a pretty good number on the habitat on island, mowing the island down repeatedly and altering water courses. So there's lots of repairing we can do in those areas.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned pollution is one of the key areas in terms of contaminating our water supply. What do homeowners need to know about how to manage pollution that they might have some responsibility for?
Yeah, so there's, one of the things that just immediately comes to mind is maybe folks have well houses that are have their own private wells, and those seem to be handy places for people to store their pesticides, their motor oil. You know, it's extra storage. Hey, let's put the lawnmower in there with all the extra fuel, and that's ripe for opportunity to spill contaminants onto your wellhead area where it's in Truman's example, his water's only 60 feet down. That's not very far. So those basic steps like that. And then for the rest of us, things we put on the ground end up in the water. Even if you're on one of the big group systems, that doesn't mean you're need to be any less responsible about what you put on the ground. So fertilizers, septic system maintenance. Yeah, think about that. Almost everybody on Vashon's waste, besides the few people that are on the sewer system, are discharging their wastewater into the ground, which then ends up in the aquifer.
But on that note, doesn't that percolating through the soil clean that water or no?
To a point. For septic systems, the main action that cleans it is the microbial activity in the functioning septic system. So that's where proper septic system maintenance and doing the care and feeding of your system is so important, because without the bacteria, if you're flooding your system and it's not functioning properly, that material can still get into
the aquifer.
Your well.
Yeah, okay. And the other thing is I have horses, and I know we have a good 100-foot perimeter around our well. But there's some regulation around that?
Yeah, so that's, you're managing it correctly. Keep the animal waste away from it, and be sure to, you know, cover your manure piles and compost your manure and do those sorts of practices. King Conservation District is a fantastic resource for those sort of activities, and you have good compost and you're protecting water quality at the same time.
Right, which we do. I mean, we have fabulous compost. Lots of it, unfortunately.
Yes, you can grow all the tomatoes you need, right?
Indeed, indeed.
So, Greg, I'm also curious, given the fact that you are an employee of King County, you do this work on the Vashon Basin, you're part of this groundwater protection committee. Are there regulatory changes that you are considering or promoting, trying to advance within King County, or do you think the regulatory structure is in pretty good shape to support the work you do?
That's a good question. Fortunately, I'm not involved in the regulatory aspects of it. So,
okay.
Yes, when I implement projects, I'm out there getting same permits that people are doing for other uses. So, yeah, there's all different kinds. Some of the things we're looking at is trying to streamline that are some of our habitat restoration activities. So we do shoreline. As we're doing marine shoreline restoration, removing bulkheads, which there is a new program to work with. Primarily, I'm doing those restoration projects. We are doing those. I don't do them by myself, but we are doing those activities on land that's acquired for preservation. But private landowners that might be interested in seeing if their bulkhead's a candidate for removal. We have a shore-friendly King County partnership out there, which involves King Conservation District and Mid-Sound Fisheries Enhancement Group. And we work with private owners on removing bulkheads or seeing if there's a soft shore, maybe an in-between alternative that's better for habitat, but also protects your landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bruce, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I had a question sort of about the groundwater reports. I mean, the CARA report was the first one. That's been updated several times. What, 4 or 5 years ago, there was a major sort of distribution of a groundwater sort of information pamphlet to the island. What's happening on those? Is that report going to be, are those reports going to be updated? Is there more activities, informational, educational activities coming along?
Yeah, that's actually one of the things we're looking at in this upcoming year is providing an update to the community on our water resources is in review of them, though, one thing we have seen is that several of them have held the test of time. If anybody's interested in these water resource topics, if you look online for Liquid Assets Vashon, if you just search for that, you'll find it. And it's a great publication that talks about all different kinds of water resources on Vashon, from what's happening with our water supply. And that's largely some of the information, of course, is over geologic time. So it hasn't aged out yet. But the other things, it's just rich with information. But we are currently reviewing some of these things and seeing if we have updated information to add. And if anybody's interested in volunteering for the Groundwater Protection Committee, we do have some vacancies and we would love to have additional participation. We're working on some really interesting projects.
And how do people get connected with you on that, Greg?
They are welcome to email me, greg.rayburn@kingcounty.gov.
And you might want to spell your last name.
It's RABOURN. Yeah, or if you just do Vashon Basin Steward, you'll probably find me in just a couple clicks.
Great. Truman, did you have another question?
Yeah, and I have to think. Oh, yeah, now I got it. That's one of those. I had to think about it a minute. Yes. I talked about this a few weeks ago with one of our guests, but I was working with Vashon Forest Stewards several years ago, and we hauled in a bunch of stumps and logs into Shingle Mill and placed them in the creek to provide habitat. And what I was wondering is, are you involved in the design of those particular projects, or do you consult with people who are trying to do that?
Yes. Yeah. We have I work closely with our small habitat restoration program, which can provide both on public land and private land. People are interested in seeing what kind of habitat enhancements. Sometimes working with the land trust or King Conservation District is a better partner, but we're happy to sort through all that and help folks out. If anybody's interested in improving habitat, you can start with me and I can. One of my main responsibilities is connecting people with resources to do that sorts of things. But we've done lots of wood placement in Judd Creek primarily.
Right, right. My other question, if I can think of it, is Go ahead. I'm going to come back to it.
Okay. While that's coming back to Truman, we know that that happens.
It does. It's coming.
I just want to mention, Greg, there's two groups that you mentioned earlier in the show. Save Our Wild Salmon. Joseph Bogard is going to be joining the Brown Briefly on January 10th. So folks interested in this topic, make sure to put that on your calendars. And the Land Trust will be joining us on January 24th, Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. Hear it here on the Brown Briefly. Truman, did that question come back?
No, it's still gone. It'll come back. Okay. It'll come back.
I have a question. Bruce. You mentioned some of the shoreline work. I know I've talked to you before about the restoration you did sort of west of Dockton Park. And you've just finished something just north of the dock at Dockton Park. I think you were involved with the Tahlequah restoration and with the monitoring that's going on with bulkhead removals. Can you talk a little bit about that and what beach restoration does and how it affects the groundwater or the interface between groundwater and sound water?
Well, it's a good question because so many folks overlook the value of shoreline. They think there's so much of it, but it's really that nearshore habitat area. It's very skinny and it's just a ribbon around Puget Sound. And it's that transition area between the beach and the upland plants is just its own unique habitat that's critical. So when we modify it by putting in bulkheads and shoreline armoring, that not only cuts off usually changes the vegetation that's hanging there, which affects what's food available for juvenile salmon and refuge areas, but it also can starve the beaches of sediment. If you think about how our beaches are formed on Vashon, we don't have Elwha River producing a whole bunch of sediment that's then covering our beaches with sand. We rely on eroding bluffs primarily here. So when bulkheads are installed and cut off that sediment supply, then our beaches become coarser and larger rock, and then there are forage fish that the salmon rely on, as well as just about everybody else. You know, I kind of view them as the mice of the sea. Everybody eats them, right? So forage fish are critical, and our surf smelt and sand lance need those smaller size sediments in order to spawn. So that's why we're focused a lot on this shoreline armoring removal in areas where we can safely do it, or in areas where houses were built where they're threatened and we can buy the property and then take the house out and then restore the shoreline completely and that sediment supply. If it slides, that's not a bad thing. In those locations, there's no threat to a property, so it's a great place for sediment to hit the beach again.
I will say that anybody who is a real world example of what Greg just described in terms of the different nature of the beach, go to Portage. The north shore of Portage is easy to gain access to the beach, and walk towards Point Robinson, and you'll notice dramatic changes in the nature of the beach as you work your way towards Point Robinson, where there's fewer bulkheads and more sandy soils. So, yeah, I was really struck by that when I had a chance to do that several years ago.
All right. That's one of the neat things about restoration along the shoreline is that the impact is very quick and it's dramatic. Sometimes we have to wait in river systems for years for a flood event to really change the system. But on the shoreline, a few high tides, things change pretty quickly.
All right. Well, unless there's any more questions for Greg, and Greg, you're welcome to stay with us, although I realize you are a King County employee, so we don't want to drag you into any touchy subjects because we're going to talk some sort of politically oriented stuff. So now's your chance to escape if you don't want to be subject to that. But I hope you'll stay with us. Any other questions for Greg? Well, until we move on. Okay. Why don't we jump into what's with the mail? Currently, you know, the United States Postal Service advertising says we are holiday ready with fast and reliable delivery. But more of my neighbors are traveling to the post office to pick up their mail because it isn't actually showing up in their mailboxes, sometimes for days on end. How's mail service worth the Brieflys? Anybody want to jump? Truman, how's your mail service?
Well, actually, I only have a post office box. I don't have mail delivery at home. So I'm doing fine. Although I sometimes go for 2 or 3 days with no mail, you know, or maybe just the third class, but no first class. So I think they're doing a great job. I feel sorry for them because it's just so overwhelmed, you know.
Yeah. Any other comments? People want to jump in?
Yeah. Craig here. I mean, you know, the mail has had its issues, been kind of spotty. I do really appreciate the work that they do and the overwork that they're subjected to. But it's, you know, when my wife Lynette and I moved to the island, many years ago, 35 years ago, we would get mail addressed to Craig and Lynette Vashon Island, and we get it in our post box.
Wow.
And the same kind of thing's going on. We have a board member whose partner is a mailman, and they called us in Ashland and said, "Oh, I understand you're away, and you've got a package that's in your mailbox. You might want to do something about that." I mean, that's pretty good service when you get that sort of attention. So I'm generally pleased. I wish more people would apply for those jobs.
Yeah. All right. So I've got to go the other direction. I have to go the other direction. Since I don't have mail delivery at home, if I get something addressed to my home address, you know, I've lived on the island, 32 years, and been at the post office that whole time. And I'm fairly recognizable. But if a package or a letter comes that has that street address, oftentimes it will get sent back. No mail receptacle they'll write on it and send it back rather than sticking it in my box. Drives me crazy. So I put my street address with POB on the end with the box number.
They know you, Truman.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe that's why it's getting sent back. They do know me.
Yes. Well, I think there was a great article in the Beachcomber maybe a couple of weeks ago now about, you know, larger mailboxes for rural areas like ours. So since the postal carrier has to drive down some sometimes lengthy driveways, you know, making it easier for them to leave materials at your box makes it easier for them. And of course, with the holiday season and the increase in shipping, we know that that just places even more demands. I have to say that I was visiting the post office on Monday morning, and the gentleman behind the counter who helped us was of amazingly good spirits. So it's always nice to see folks who are taking on those responsibilities, burdened with a fairly stressful responsibility, but bringing a good attitude and hopefully good cheer to a really essential service for us.
Yeah, there's a group of islanders who are organizing a kind of thank you and support our mail persons, if you will, by delivering goodies early in the morning, 6 a.m., to the post office. And so if you're interested, just check out Facebook. There's a group organizing to set up a kind of a helpline for the early morning postal delivery guys, people, to deliver them some goodies every morning. So I think anything we can do to help them do their job is useful, because it's a tough job.
It is a tough job. And I sometimes we have packages delivered to a neighbor who lives on the street, not down our, you know, quarter mile driveway. And I have seen the mail carriers out at like 8-9 o'clock at night. So, you know, they are working hard, even though you may experience some delays. We need to realize that they're putting everything into it to make it happen.
I completely agree, but I do have to tell you about the last letter I got in my mailbox. It was, first of all, the first two numbers, the first two numbers was wrong. So I thought, well, okay, I can get that. I can understand that. And then I looked, that name, of course, was wrong. It wasn't me. And then I looked at the city, and the city was Chehalis. So,
holy smokes.
Yeah, I showed it to a Jimmy that works there, and he just laughed. He said, well, it's close. So
it's in the state.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Greg, we welcome your comments, by the way, but unless you say anything on the post office, we're going to move on to Nashville.
Well, one more comment on the post office, if you will. Sort of, you know, recognize what's going on here. I mean, the post office under the last administration was attempted to be starved to death. You know, in a very conscious attempt to sort privatize the postal service or replace it with UPS and FedEx and those kind of things. And so, you know, it's a real attack on a basic fundamental institution of American democracy, everybody gets mail delivered, no matter where you live. And so let's not lose sight of the fact that there's a concerted campaign to make the post office fail. And it's up to all of us as citizens to make sure that we resist that and make sure that the post office does not fail.
Yeah, and I suspect that the thank you sign right across the street from the post office, just north of their building, is a signature of Vachon's care that we do preserve that system. And I'm sure that sign is still there, but it's sort of now a fixture. But that's kind of what prompted that, I believe. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of the previous administration, thank you, Bruce, for the wonderful segue. Our prior president, Kanye and Nick Fuentes, I thought this would be a little sidebar news item that needed some amplification on the show today. But the news of former President Trump dining with anti-Semitic hip-hop artist Kanye West, now Ye, and far-right activist Nick Fuentes is now headline news. So anyway, by now, we all kind of know what's going on in Trump's mind. And I'll say, in fact, if Hoover wanted to perfect a more perfect vacuum, they should be studying Trump's mind. But that's another topic. But I do have to wonder what's going on in Kanye's mind. First of all, he invites Nick Fuentes to dinner. Does he know that Fuentes rails against a multicultural America and has expressed concern on his show about the U.S. population becoming less white? And how could Kanye possibly feel comfortable in this crowd who cheers Hungarian Prime Minister Orban's belief that Europeans should not become people of mixed race? Any comments? How does this crowd come together? Craig, what are your thoughts?
Kanye early on yelled, not included, so that he wouldn't be included in that group of underrepresented individuals, that all those thoughts don't apply to him. Could I get much more sarcastic?
No.
I don't know. I think the whole thing is, and Kevin, I got to hand it to you. You know what's in the mind of our ex-president? That's saying something. I'll tell you.
I am speculating. On little data, I should say.
Yeah, I do think it's right in line with his playbook. A nod to certain groups, white nationalists and whatnot. But later on say, oh, I didn't know, that Kanye was this way, and I didn't even know who this other fellow was. And that you get to play it on both sides. Keep certain big contingencies happy.
Hey, Craig, they're good people on both sides. Come on, he's told us that already.
I've heard you say that many times.
No, I didn't say that. Trump did.
You're just repeating what you've heard.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, Greg, Truman, and Bruce, any other? How do we explain this mystery in front of us?
For me, I don't see it as a mystery at all. I mean, it's sort of as Craig said, it's part of the playbook. In the playbook, clearly is sort of fanning the flames, if you will, of racial fear. Great replacement theory kind of concept. I mean, that was sort of poo-pooed 20, 30, 40 years ago. Now it's sort of mainstream right-wing kind of propaganda, if you will. The fact that, the white race and the sort of American democracy and all these kind of things are being supplanted by this wave of immigrants in this multicultural, multiracial kind of society. And it's sort of like, and that's where the Hungarian premier gets his power. That's what Putin's doing in Russia. It's an authoritarian tactic, and it's very effective. And unless we sort of resist it and clarify that race, the great replacement theory is just bunk. We're going to see ourselves in a very difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the importance of the playbook and understanding it, you know, one time some years ago, I drafted, it was going to be like a 10-point, here's the playbook. And point number one was, look befuddled and say you don't know anything about this person or this group. Right? That's number one. But I think I worked my way up to like 7 out of 10 points, and I wish I could find it. Maybe maybe I'll bring it back to so we can comment on it. So, hey, there's another interesting wrinkle from the dinner that we described with former President Yi and Fuentes. Is apparently Yi invited Trump to be his 2024 vice presidential running mate. How do you suppose that went over?
Yeah, with that ego, I can just see that. Well, Kanye West said that he did get yelled at, and I suspect that was what it was.
I wonder what Ron DeSantis thinks of all that.
I think Ron DeSantis is thrilled by all of that.
You bet he is.
We need to start referring to him as Ron DeFuture.
Ron DeFuture. Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Would that be an improvement for the conservative party in America?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I think anything would be an improvement. But incrementally.
Yeah. Just more articulate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot who just really appreciate the fact that, you know, it is possible in a democracy to have a mature dialogue and discussion about events that affect people's lives and to come to some agreement, recognizing that there is a diversity of views in our world and that those need to be acknowledged and respected in the whole process. And without a Republican platform even, you know, it's certainly that system seems to have broken down for us right at the moment. Okay, well, why don't we move on? You know, we in the past on the Brown Briefly have talked about movements around democracy. We've talked about uprisings in Hong Kong years ago. We talked about the elections in Israel, which now again have pitted Benjamin Netanyahu's coalition. And is now, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu's back in power. And some of his playbook is very similar to our previous president and probably aligned with Hungarian Prime Minister Orban, which looks sort of non-democratic to us. So now anti-COVID lockdown protests in China are in the news. The notion that emerging democracy movement in Hong Kong a year or more ago, we recognized that there was maybe some hope there. But Bruce, I think you called it right, that the government eventually would suppress that movement. And now, of course, they filled local Hong Kong government positions with Qi loyalists. What do you think about the current round of protests influencing Chinese leaders? And where might that go? And what hopes do you have to see an outcome? Craig, what are your thoughts about the whole movement?
Well, I whether or not it'll be effective is one thing. The technique they're using, I think, is brilliant. The holding up of blank sheets of paper in front of their faces so that, one, the protesters aren't identified, and two, they don't say anything on the paper that could get them into trouble. So the question is, are they going to crack down on people getting together, holding up blank pieces of paper in front of their faces? You know, if they do, then it's like, holy cow, you know, you really have shown your true colors. I think that the technique they're using is brilliant. Whether or not it'll be effective, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sense is, Craig and others, that what you saw at the last party Congress, where the former president was escorted abruptly off stage, is what we'll see. I mean, you know, the authoritarian governments will handle protest up to a certain point and then just slam down. Tiananmen Square, perfect example. I think that's what we're going to see in China, is more Tiananmen Squares. The difference today is that COVID underlies all this, and the COVID lockdowns and the sort of resistance to that. So there's a tension in Chinese society that we haven't seen for, you know, the last 50, 60 years. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out.
So just to be clear, they are protesting the lockdowns. Is that correct? I mean, Are they also protesting the vaccination program, or is it just the lockdowns? Or
my understanding is the lockdowns become the trigger for these protests. But I mean, they're protesting the lack of access to the internet, the freedom of speech. I mean, democracy. I mean, it's a broad based kind of resistance to totalitarian control.
Okay.
And so the lockdowns sort of became the trigger point for it. But there's much deeper, as I understand it, and particularly among young Chinese. I mean, again, we're getting filtered news, so it's really hard to sort of totally know what's going on. But as you read between the lines, that's what I see happening.
Okay. Well, and Bruce, you know, I think you brought up the characterization of this election that we just had in our country as a possible inflection point regarding democracy versus autocracy. And globally, the trend line is towards further autocracy, and citing many, many countries that are moving in an autocratic direction. Well, now in the United States, of course, our election suggests that maybe we have at least a pause, or maybe it is an inflection point. Even though in China, these protests may not change the Chinese system, what do you think the influence is on other countries? And how might a global democracy movement be influenced by what's happening in China? Is there a strong relationship there? Hmm. What do you think, Bruce?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I was going to say, give us an easy question.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the issue is always chaos. Okay, when things get more chaotic, authoritarian regimes seem more attractive.
Yep.
Okay, COVID is a huge chaos, and it's still rippling through, and it will ripple through for another generation. And as long as those kinds of issues are out there that come out of COVID and the disruptions to supply chains and the economic disruptions and all those kind of things, you know, authoritarian leaders are attractive to lots and lots of people because they offer stability. No, there's a huge cost to that stability. But that's what people, in my mind at least, what people are weighing. Is it better to be stable and have less freedom and maybe be rounded up and sent to a camp? Mm-hmm. Or is it better to have some stability and predictability? And that's what I see the battle going on right now in the United States and around the world.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Hitler in 39. I mean, that's, you know, the economy was in shambles. He put the hammer down, and they thought, wow, this is great. You know, production came up, and boy, look what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, hard to know what's going to happen at the national level. And thanks for fielding that really challenging question. I do want to inspire people to think about these things. But I will say that within Washington State, you know, we now have one additional Democrat senator, and it looks like we're very close to having another Democrat House member, although it looks like that is going to be close to going into a recount. That one particular, I believe it's Clyde Shavers in LD-10, which my good friend Larry Barrent has been working to change the dynamics of politics in the 10th legislative district. So I think hopefully in Washington State we're seeing an interest in making sure that we don't move into those autocratic systems. And obviously our King County government is very supportive of that same objective. Let's see, briefly before we go, in Iran, the niece of Iran's supreme leader urges the world to cut ties with Tehran. What do you think in Iran? Is the same thing with China, that they'll ultimately prevail, or is Iran in a less stable condition? Anybody have a comment?
Well, it seems to me that the Iranian people are pretty highly educated, and they have they've had a past of some freedoms that they're trying to get back, maybe. So they may have a chance, more so maybe than China.
Okay, we will keep an eye on it here in the Brown Briefly, so tune in and make sure to follow along. I will say upcoming events. Tonight at 6 p.m., the Vashon Mori Community Council will have a community land acknowledgement statement meeting. What that means is the council has approved introducing a land acknowledgement statement into their proceedings, but we need to define what that statement contains. And so these community meetings are an opportunity for folks to join in and share your thoughts about what would be appropriate for a land acknowledgement statement. You can join in tonight at 6 p.m. The link is bit.ly/, now all capital letters, VMCCLAS-2. That's Vashon Mori Community Council Land Acknowledgement Statement -2, second meeting. And Craig, would you want to tell us about next week's small talk guest who you arranged?
Yeah, next week should be an interesting small talk situation. We've got Mike Witt, a fellow Islander, who will be wearing two hats. He will come in and tell us about the Vashon Sportsman's Club. For those of you who've never been there or don't know anything about it except for rumors, you may learn something about the Vashon Sportsman's Club. And then he will switch hats and he will talk about his very successful book, Vashon Island Fall, about an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, a bomb that goes off above the island and takes out all the electricity. And what happens? It should be interesting.
Woohoo. Well, keep your eyes on here. Greg, thank you for joining us. For Bruce, Truman, Craig, I'm Kevin Jones. Hope you'll join us next week.